Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins. I work for Fairway Markets in the New York area, and we're awfully proud to support Heritage Radio, and we care so much about everything that goes on out here at Roberta's in their studio, because they talk to people who are serious about food, and that's what we are at Fairway, is we're serious about food. We just care very deeply about you as a customer, and how you cook and what you cook with and how you entertain, and that's why we love to support Heritage Radio, because it's pretty much the same thing. It's wanting to find happiness through serious food and people who are serious about it and care about learning everything there is to learn about it. And that's we're kindred spirits. If it's something worth having in your kitchen, you're going to find it at Fairway. And if there's somebody worth talking to about food, you're going to find them on Heritage Radio, and we will be supporting you guys for a long, long time. At Fairway, I'm your personal grocer, Steve Jenkins, Fairway Market.
Boys, I'm mellow as a honeydew. Yeah. That cat is high. Look that look in his eye. Oh man, he's high. Yes, high.
Welcome to the Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte. You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. My guest today is Ari Form of The Jake Walk and Carroll Gardens. Welcome to the show, Ari.
Thank you for having me.
How are you today?
I'm pretty good. I'm doing a lot better since you
got me that beer.
Sorry, we had a little mic problem there for a second.
Is this thing on?
It is on.
Oh, fantastic.
All right, welcome to the show. Hey, so I wanted to talk to you about, obviously, the bar. We'll get into that in a little bit. But I wanted to talk to you about your first experiences with the service industry and how you got into bartending and the long and winding road to get to that door, so to speak.
Where would you like me to begin?
Let's talk about Cluck You Chicken.
You remember. Actually, it's not to split hairs, but Cluck You Chicken would be the New Jersey chain of Buffalo Wing restaurants. Which
Buffalo Wild Wings?
Buffalo Wild Wing, which I grew up near in New Jersey. But in New York, the restaurant is Pluck You.
Pluck You.
Yes. So,
okay.
I don't want to misrepresent who I worked for. But yeah, when I was 18, I moved right into the city to attend NYU, and I immediately got employed at Pluck You Chicken on 3rd Avenue and 10th Street, where my sister was also working, and I was responsible for taking phone orders for delivery, ringing people up at the cash register, and mopping up after work.
Awesome. What were you actually, when you were going to NYU, did you go for any kind of like hospitality or like management or anything like that?
No, I went kind of just undecided, wanted to move to the city, got accepted there. So it was exciting. I had my father owned a Jewish style deli.
Oh, cool.
When I was growing up. So I'd always been around that kind of environment. But then about 2 years after I moved to the city, I got my first Manhattan restaurant job at the infamous NoHo Star.
NoHo Star?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. What were you doing there?
I got a job just waiting tables, and which I basically, you know, just like everybody, I gave them a resume that said I'd been working since I was, you know, 1 year old, doing everything in a restaurant. But in reality, I didn't even know how to carry a tray. And I just, you know, I told all the people that were training me the truth, and, you know, just worked really hard and got it down. And then when I was working there, and mind you, I was still 20 at the time, I became quite friendly with one of the bartenders, whose name, funnily enough, was Matthew Perry. and I just started asking questions because, you know, as you know, being a bartender is like the coolest, most romantic thing in the world to like a 20-year-old
right.
man who, you know, likes to enjoy themselves out at night.
In New York City.
Yes, exactly.
There's a movie about that.
Maybe a couple of movies about that. but yeah, so I just started asking questions, and basically he was like, dude, you can get behind the bar. It's very easy. And I'm like, it can't be that easy. You know, you work magic back there. And we're talking mid-90s here, so this is it's a while ago. And he said, no. All you have to do is know how to pour tap beer, be nice to people, make a cosmopolitan, a margarita, a Manhattan, and a martini. And you can work behind the bar. You'll be fine. I was like, great. Show me how to make those drinks. And he did. And we were all, they were all just filled with tons of ice shards and free pour. I don't even know what they taste like. I didn't even know you're supposed to taste your own drinks.
Yeah.
But before
it's
I was
more about the color.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And how much and how big the glass was.
Yeah.
But before I was even 21, I was doing day shifts behind the bar.
Cool.
So yeah, that's how I got into bartending. And then after that, I eventually found myself in fine dining at Union Square Cafe, with a couple stops in between at some places in Chelsea behind the bar or whatever. And there I learned that there's a different style of service and bartending. And so I sort of had to relearn the whole process. And I started there from back waiting all the way to server and then to bartender as well, where I learned more of how I perceive the craft of bartending now.
You know, it's really, I've always found it very important for any bartender, and usually, I mean, obviously, you don't just jump right into bartending,
right?
To have that service-minded skill, you know, like the skills of the server, as far as interacting with the customers,
right,
and like doing some of the grunt work, like bussing, and you know, running the whole gamut of everything. Getting into the bar, you take all those skills with you. You should at least, especially like the actual hospitality part of that, you know, being
yes,
nice people, being courteous, being a great bartender, you know, comes from those service skills.
Yeah, I think the hardest part about being behind the bar, or the most challenging maybe, is being completely in the weeds, you know, too deep. You have so much stuff to do, and still having the entire bar eating out of the palm of your hand. You know, you have one side of the bar laughing, you have another side of the bar, you know, telling you, you know, their deepest secrets, and you're still pumping out cocktails, refilling wine, pouring beer, you know, like a total control [S2] Yeah. [S1] Of the bar. And when it's happening, it's exhilarating. It's a lot of fun, and it just fills you with adrenaline, and it's a good day when that happens.
Yeah. You know, I always tell people whenever I'm training a bartender, you know, you have to play so many roles as a bartender. Obviously, you're basically a host, a waiter,
yep,
a chef. I mean, you know, you are, I hate the term bar chef, but it's kind of what you are. A manager, a cashier, you're like a busser. You basically do every single job.
Don't forget bouncer.
Bouncer as well. That's yeah, a very important part. And you have to take on all those responsibilities. And it's, like you were just saying, it's exhilarating when you have all those things in this nice balance, all those aspects of being a bartender in the bar, in the establishment, keeping the balance. And once you get through that night, it's a very pleasurable experience.
Yes. It's a natural high. It's amazing.
Now, let's go back to the bouncer part of that. Have you ever had to bounce someone?
Oh, yeah.
Like, I mean, like, really bounce someone?
Not in the sense of...
I'm not asking.
I've never had to physically take somebody and throw them out of the bar, which I don't think I can do.
I can't either.
I don't know. I know we're on the radio, but you have really big hands, and I'm very jealous. I just have to say that. But anyway, besides that,
RE form.
No, it's coming from a bartender's perspective. I wish I had bigger hands.
You know, that's another thing that I tell my bartenders when I train them is like, get bigger hands, man.
but
I do tell them a lot. You know, one of the most important things about bartending is knowing where everything is, mm-hmm, and being extremely comfortable with your own hands.
Yeah.
So
I agree.
I accept your compliment, sir. Yeah,
well, my pleasure. But no, they're actually probably about every other month At the Jake Walk on a like a Friday or Saturday night, I will have to suggest to somebody that maybe they'd not have a drink there, another drink there, that maybe it's time to move on. And then when I convince them of that, then we call all of the bars in the neighborhood and tell them not to serve this person.
Right. I've definitely done that before, too. It's usually you guys, mini bar, Abilene. Yeah.
We do bar
Brooklyn
Grey,
Social.
Bar Grey Harry. Yeah. Because they're right across the street.
That's funny. Do you have a preferred shutdown chop that you use on people, as far as a line?
Yeah, well, no, not a line. It's more of a sort of an aura that you create with the conversation that you're having. I think the biggest mistake that people have in those situations, unless they are a huge bouncer and are just, physically intimidating, is to not make the other person feel like, or to be argumentative, or to tell them that they're doing something wrong, because they're they've had a little bit too much, so they're going to take offense and it's going to escalate from there. So you just try, try to be very friendly, even before bringing up the fact that maybe they shouldn't have another drink. I really just like to try to get them on my side somehow.
That's a good point. Kind of create some leverage, create some a friendly banter.
Let me talk to you, guy to guy here.
Yeah.
Let me talk to you man to man. You seem like a great guy.
You seem like a great guy.
Let me ask you something. But can you please leave?
My favorite one is the GM at Prime Meats, Max Quadrone. His line I've adopted since I heard him say it one of the first times we had to ask someone to leave.
Mm-hmm.
I think you've had a little bit too much fun tonight.
Ah, awesome.
Which, it's like one of the nicest ways I've ever
heard it. It is. It is, because you're agreeing with the person.
Yeah, you're having fun.
Yeah.
You might have had a little bit too much.
Exactly. You don't want to waste tomorrow's fun.
One of the things I say all the time about the Jake Walk and about yourself, the two main things I really like about the Jake Walk are that you have, in my opinion, the best collection of spirits in Brooklyn.
Thank you.
There are places like Char 4 that has a great bourbon selection, other places like Dram that has a really nice selection of some rare Amari and rums that they bring in. You guys truly do have the best as far as you have all these different Calvados and different whiskeys and different rums, and you've got a great selection of just brandies and eau de vies. You've got it all. And the second thing that I really like about the Jake Walk, and probably one of the most important parts of why you guys are so beloved in the neighborhood, is that you treat people in a way that they don't get treated at most cocktail bars. You guys are obviously very serious about what you're doing, but you are some of the nicest bartenders in the city, and you don't take it too seriously. You keep your... You don't have such a game face like a lot of the. I hope that doesn't come off as weird, but you have fun with it. You keep it lighthearted. You keep the guests engaged. You just create this great vibe that attracts people in the neighborhood and from other parts of New York City. And I think it's very important for, especially nowadays, because there's a lot of snobbery going around the bar scene, and it's really important to keep grounded. And you're there to have fun or relax at the end of the day, and to have a bartender be kind of cold and just plain rude sometimes.
Right.
Nobody wants that.
No. I think both Matt DeVrent, my partner in business and in life, both of us come from the school of bartending where it was not necessarily the time where people would come in when we were learning how to bartend. People would come in and expect you to make them a drink, in the sense of, make me something, with rye and arrak and, cherries or
right.
They're not coming in with the expectation that they could just give you an idea, and then it's up to you to make the drink. We come from a school where people ask you for a drink, and then you make it for them. Mm-hmm. Pretty simple. But yeah. The overwhelmingly important and difficult task as a bartender would be to be able to make those drinks and then make them feel great about where they're having that drink.
Right.
No matter what it is.
Right.
You know, a glass of water all the way up to a, you know, a cognac, an expensive cognac or something like that. And that's always been our number one focus, not just with ourselves behind the bar, but with the staff as well, is that if you want to work for us, you have to get over yourself immediately. You know, we're all great people. We're all friends. We're family. After the shift, we're, you know, we're holding hands and having drinks together. But during the shifts, it is, number one, all about the customer. And it's very easy. All you have to do is be pleasant. And, you know, even if they ask a question that is a little frustrating, just answer it. Get over yourself.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, totally.
Yeah, just answer it.
Yeah. Your partner, Maddie, you guys, you're affiliated with a couple of other businesses in the neighborhood. You've got Stinky Cheese, and you've got Smith and Vine, which you've got a cheese shop, and you've got a wine and spirit shop. Those were the first two. It was Stinky first, and then Smith and Vine.
Other way around.
Okay.
Yeah. Smith and Vine is, geez, I think Smith and Vine is like 7 or 8 years old now. And wow, Stinky is like 5 or 6 or something like that.
Okay.
And they are just a... There's Patrick Watson and Michelle Pravda, married couple. They own Smith & Vine and Stinky.
Mm-hmm.
And Maddie and I worked for them at Smith & Vine, and then we partnered up with them to do the Jake Walk. So they're the sort of the masterminds behind the whole thing.
And it was just natural for them to have a spirit store, and then like a cheese and charcuterie and provisions kind of store. And...
just mash it up.
Mash it up and put some stools in front of it,
yes.
You know?
Yes.
And it's been a really great addition to the neighborhood. We're going to talk more about this when we get back from our break after these words from Mobb Deep.
Yeah.
Yeah. To all the killers and the $100 billers. Yo, watch out. For real, because who ain't got no feelings. Feelings. Check it out now. I got you stuck off the realness. We be the infamous, you heard of us. Official Queensbridge murderers. The mob comes equipped for warfare. Beware of my crime family who got enough shots to share. For all those who wanna profile and pose, rock you in your face, stab your brain with your nose bone. You all alone in these streets, cousin. Every man for himself in his land. We be gunning and keep them shook crews running like they supposed to. They come around, but they never come close to. I can see it inside your face. You're in the wrong place. Cowards like you just get their whole body laced up with bullet holes and such. Speak the wrong words, man, and you will get touched. You can put your whole army against my team, and I guarantee you it'll be your very last time breathing.
Yeah, I guarantee you it'll be your very last time breathing.
Nice. Ari picked the break music today. My guest today is Ari Form of the Jake Walk in Brooklyn, New York. And you're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. This is The Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte. We were just talking before the break about the three companies, Stinky Cheese, Smith & Vine, and, of course, the bar that you own in and operate, the Jake Walk. And I really... One of the things that really... has made the neighborhood for me personally. I actually live in the neighborhood as you do as well. That's made it more of a more pleasurable place to live and an easier place to live are those three places. I mean, obviously I like cheese and charcuterie, and I like pickles from McClure's, and I like, you know, chocolate from Mass Brothers, and a nice selection of giant beers. Mm-hmm. I can get all those at Stinky Cheese. And then I also like, you know, old bottles of Burgundy and Fernet Branca, as everyone probably already knows, our listening audience.
Take your shirt off.
Yeah. I'm not going to. I wish they could see that. and having those right there, basically right outside my door, is amazing enough. And then, you know, the Jake Wall came around and basically gives you a chance to put all those together. But also what's really cool about that in that situation, like, you can, you know, you can go to Smith and Vine or Stinky and you can buy like an expensive cheese or an expensive bottle of wine or like a, you know, a $50 bottle of Nardini Amaro, which we actually have in front of us right now. But, you know, some people have a problem, and rightly so, like having a problem pulling a trigger on, pulling the trigger on like a, an expensive bottle of wine or right. Amaro or some crazy like $35, $7.50 of beer that they've never had.
That they've never had, exactly.
But what's brilliant about the setup that you guys have is that you've given people an opportunity to buy those, like to procure those glasses of wine, those glasses of Amaro, those cheeses, those meats, like one little bit at a time. So it becomes more accessible for someone. So they can actually go to the bar and restaurant. It is a restaurant as well. Try these things out, and then it goes back into the company as well. But I mean, that sounds a little corporate.
I think
I came off, but it actually is really important because it's also a neighborhood establishment. These are neighborhood establishments. It's nice to support the neighborhood, you know, to support local companies and vendors. And you guys definitely do that with anything that you can buy at like Stinky and at Smith and Vine. You get some local wines and spirits and stuff like that as well. Yeah, it's really nice.
It is. And thank you for saying that. It's not just the sampling aspect, which is definitely there, but it's also the sense of community.
Absolutely.
Where, for example, the face of Stinky, who is, I think, one of the most underappreciated people that I know in this world for what he does, is Chris Remy, who runs the place. Fantastic palate.
Oh, he's awesome.
He's tremendous. He's a Yankee fan, which kind of sucks, but
he always wears that Yankee.
Yeah, I know, it's pretty lame. But he's responsible for doing the beer selection and whatever, doing everything. He's been there since day one. And we're friends. And then you have Max or Sherry or Kumar over at Smith and Vine. And, you know, it's everybody knows everybody. Everybody's friends. And, you know, when you're talking about the other place, you're talking to prospective customers. You're talking about the other place with on a first name basis, and you understand mm-hmm. What their products are. So you give, especially in Brooklyn, where there's a lot of transients in neighborhoods. You know, people are moving in and out all the time.
Absolutely.
And it's nice for people moving in to immediately feel this idea of a community. And
absolutely,
even in their retail lives, you know, mm-hmm. And it's really nice, and you see it pay off. It's the same thing as working at a bar when somebody comes in and you say hi to them by name. It's mm-hmm. the exact same thing. It makes them feel less anxious about what they're doing, and everybody's anxious all the time
in New York, probably.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I get what you're saying. Especially, it goes a little bit further than that. You know, you're talking about these people on a first name basis. You've got like, you know, Dwayne Sorensen from Stumptown Coffee. You see him around right. the neighborhood. He frequents the places. You've got like Shane Welsh from Six Point.
Right.
You've got Ann Saxelby from Saxelby Cheesemongers.
Right.
You've got all these people that these are the people that you're procuring these.
Garrett Oliver
yep. From Brooklyn Brewery. Yeah. I mean, you've got these amazing people that are just wanting to do and doing a pretty good job of it. If I'm any kind of judge of what's going on, doing a really great job of making these artisanal products, and also what they are, you're right. These people are creating a community, and I wouldn't call it a scene.
No, but that's what's great about it. But at the heart of it, which a lot of people who aren't necessarily involved and sort of are on the periphery, we'll call it a scene. And there are aspects of it that are scene-like, but at the heart of it, it's not. It's a community. It's just mm-hmm. it's just people doing what they like to do and it's having
fun together.
People
wanting to do something really amazing.
Yeah, exactly.
It's all about quality. And going back to the bar, you know, We definitely hear a lot of backlash sometimes about like cocktail bars being kind of like the new thing, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And a few years ago when you started to see this resurgence of cocktail bar, like classic cocktail bars and people featuring, you know, higher end spirits, higher end wine, just quality stuff. I mean, really it all comes down to quality. And then you had critics raising the question, is this just a fad? And right. Can quality be a fad? Well, is it trendy to be into something that's good, like down to the very like core of it, you know?
I actually have I have an opinion on that.
Okay. Let's hear it.
I think that there's a, with what you're talking about, this movement, or the shift of quality. Mm-hmm. I think that there is sort of an ideology behind it that is very simple and should be taken to its furthest development, which is, to me, maybe I'm wrong, but to me, the goal is for bars, I'm not talking about food here, I'm talking mm-hmm. about for drinks, the goal is that every bar in the world will have a good good well, good speed rack,
mm-hmm.
And fresh juice,
mm-hmm.
and the bartender will know what they're making.
And how to use those.
In the sense of, yes, exactly, in the sense of what the liquids that are in their bottles taste like,
mm-hmm.
and how to properly make a drink. Properly make a drink does not mean that they have to have, you know, like huge chunks of ice that they're shaving
cold
off.
Or,
yeah, exactly.
Scotch
it just
standard.
Means that, just don't shake my Manhattan. That's all I ask.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, but it's very simple. And don't stir my margarita. You know, it's really straightforward. So a good well, fresh juice, and know how to, you know, have a bartender who knows what they're doing.
Yeah.
I think it's a very simple goal.
That's, yeah. That's not a lot to ask.
So, that aspect can't die. But like, I personally will not let that die. Even if I'm the last one standing, I will still be going around to bars with lemons and limes, being like, I'll juice for free. free drinks, at least. but the ostentation that comes along with it, because it's a money business and because it's New York and or whatever, because it's bars and mm-hmm. It attracts scenes and fads and fashions, the ostentation that comes along or piggybacks on top of that basic ideology, I don't know how, what kind of staying power that has. I don't really care either, but
mm-hmm.
You know, if it went away, if it stayed around, it's not going to affect me. As long as, and I really mean it, so I'll repeat it again. As long as people keep their, understand what the goal is amongst us all and understand what they have to do to achieve that goal. You know, so whatever, you can, you know, you can light everything on fire. You can, you could have the biggest ice cubes I've ever seen in my life. But if you shake my Manhattan, I'm going to be upset.
I'm going to come over the bar.
Yes, yes.
We only have a couple more minutes left with Ari Form of the Jake Walk. Goes by fast, doesn't it?
It really does.
30 minutes goes by in no time.
Can we drink Calvados now?
Yeah, sure. Let's do that. As you know, if you've listened to the show before, we typically... just a sec. All right. Typically, we do a cocktail or a drink at the end of the show, and we have our guest explain what we're drinking. So what are we drinking?
Am I allowed to say the product's name?
Sure.
It's a 18-year-old Calvados from Adrian Camus. Delicious, double distilled. The prolonged aging really allows some of the harsher notes to fall off, and it's just really bright, floral, baked apple, delicious Calvados.
Yeah, it smells great. So Calvados is an apple brandy, typically made with sour apples from Normandy.
Right.
And it's usually always double distilled, aged in limousine oak.
Right.
And this one has been resting for 18 years, and it smells awesome, and I can't wait to drink it. Hold on just a sec. Awesome.
Do you know that within Calvados there's a classification called Dom Fronte, which means it has to be 30% at least pear.
Mm-hmm. And they go well together.
Yes, they do.
Ari, do you have this at your bar at the Jaquot?
We have the 12-year, which is equally delicious. It's a little rounder, actually, a little fatter. This is sort of leaned up as it's aged, but equally good. This is a little more elegant, I would say.
It's very nice. Thanks for bringing it on the show. And thanks for coming on the show. Thanks for bringing yourself on the show.
Thanks for having me, man.
No problem. My guest today has been Ari Form of the Jaquot and Carroll Gardens. You can have some Calvados with him most nights. He's there. If you were listening to the show last week, you'll know that tonight we are sending out an open invitation to King Yum's, one of the original three tiki bars in New York City, or the New York City area. We'll be there at 7 o'clock tonight with our last week's guest, Adam Kolosar. And tune in next week, where my guest will be Ian Wolf of La Cucina Italiano magazine. Cheers. Man, he's high. I said that cat is high. Yeah.